Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Feinberg, and today we will be learning Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud, Chapter 10. In yesterday's Perek, we encountered a series of apparent coincidences that were carefully orchestrated by Hashem, the great conductor, so that every person was in the right place at the right time in order for his will to be revealed. The apparently innocuous loss of the donkeys just at the point when Shmuel had sent everyone home. Shaul, a man of sterling character, sent to search far and wide, finally arriving at the city precisely when Shmuel walked out to ascend the Bama. Every finely tuned instrument came together to form a harmonious whole in which Hashem's plan would be fulfilled. Shmuel and Shaul spent the night discussing holy topics, and in the morning, Shmuel escorted Shaul out of the city towards home and instructed Shaul's attendant to walk on ahead so that he might be left alone with Shaul once more. In today's perek, we will see Shaul transition from the quiet, private life he has lived until now to the public servant he is destined to become. We will examine how well he handles the demands of kingship, especially the balance between commanding due respect and recognizing and responding to the needs of the people he serves. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Vayikach Shmuel et pach ha-shemin, vayitzok al rosho, vayishakehu, vayomer, halo ki meshachacha ha-shem al nachalato lenagid. Shmuel took a flask of oil and poured it on Shaul's head. He kissed him and said, Hashem has anointed you over his portion as a ruler. Shmuel performs two distinct actions here. He anoints Shaul with oil and he kisses him. The anointment is unusual in several ways. First of all, the use of the pach, an earthenware flask, rather than a keren, a horn, is out of the ordinary. Second, there's no mention of this oil being the special Shemen HaMishcha, the oil that was specially prepared for the consecration of the Mishkan in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, which was designated for use of the anointment for the anointments of the kings of Israel. And moreover, this anointment takes place in secrecy, with absolute privacy, not in a public ceremony. So how can we explain these puzzling phenomena? Malbim explains that the purpose of this secret anointment was to invest Shaul with a new spirit, a spirit of strength and confidence. The kiss with which Shmuel followed the anointment was to bind Shaul's spirit to that of Shmuel, to infuse him with Shmuel's spirit of prophecy so that his spirit would be elevated and sanctified. And the reason this was done privately was so that the people would not take note of the use of the flask of ordinary oil rather than the horn of the special Shemen HaMishcha, the oil designated for anointment, which would have made them suspicious that Shaul's monarchy would be a temporary one. The fact that his monarchy would be temporary is also hinted to us in the use of the word ki meshachacha Hashem al nachalato l'nagid. Hashem has anointed you over his inheritance as a ruler, a prince, rather than a melech, a king. So why did Hashem anoint Shaul, knowing that his monarchy would be temporary, rather than a king from the tribe of Yehuda, whose kingdom would have been a lasting one? The Ramban, Nachmanides, in Bereshit 49:10, explains that since the people asked for a king at the wrong time, while Shmuel was still successfully leading them, Hashem acceded to their request, but in a manner that expressed his disappointment with them, by granting them only a temporary kingdom. Nevertheless, says Ramban, had Shaul not sinned, he might have remained king and founder of a dynasty that would have lasted over part of Israel, perhaps the children of Rachel. The tribes of Binyamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh might have constituted a separate malchut or a subsidiary malchut to that of David, but of the house of David of Yehuda, but a lasting malchut nonetheless. Shmuel now gives Shaul three signs that will prove that his words are true. First, when you leave me today, says Shmuel to Shaul, you will encounter two men who are currently at Kever Rachel, and you will meet them at the border of Binyamin in Tzaltzach. Rashi explains that Tzaltzach is a reference to Yerushalayim. The Alshich HaKadosh explains that the mention of Kever Rachel is to remind Shaul of his illustrious ancestress and to indicate that it is in her merit that he is to become king. And this also hints that as Rachel's descendant, it would be his job to defeat Amalek, as Binyamin was the only one of the tribes who did not bow to Amalek's grandfather Esav, having not yet been born when Yaakov encountered Esav upon his return to his father's house. The men Shaul would meet would say to him, "The donkeys you have been seeking have been found. Your father has ceased worrying about the donkeys and is worried about you, saying, 'What shall I do about my son?'" Shmuel continues, "The second sign will occur as you continue on to Elon Tavor, where you will encounter three men on their way to serve Hashem at Beit El. One will be carrying three goats, another three loaves of bread, and the third a container of wine. They will inquire as to your well-being and give you two loaves of bread, and you shall take it from them. Then you will come to Givat HaElokim, the hill of God," which Rashi explains refers to Kiryat Yaarim, where the Aron is found. It's a suburb of Yerushalayim. "And the Plishti officers, and there are Plishti officers who are now stationed there. There you will encounter a group of prophets who are descending from the Bama, from the platform, and they will be preceded by musical instruments, a lyre, drum, flute, and harp, and they will be prophesying. The spirit of Hashem will pass over you, and you will prophesy among them. V'nehefachta le'ish acher, you will be transformed to a different man. And after these signs are realized, aseh lecha asher timtza yadcha, do that which is in your reach, for Hashem is with you." While some commentators, such as Radak, explain this as a general exhortation to prepare himself as best as possible for the kingship, most, such as Rashi, understand it as an instruction to Shaul to prepare royal garments and other instruments of royalty. The specificity of the signs that Shmuel set for Shaul clearly beg interpretation, and the commentators do not disappoint. For example, Abarbanel sees the three signs as exemplary of the three spheres of life which Shaul would now have to balance going forward. The family circle, as expressed by the first encounter, which focuses on the personal concern of Shaul's father. From there, he will have to broaden his focus. V'chalafta misham v'hala. You will change over from there and beyond to the national sphere, in which he will have to concern himself with the property of the people. He may take, in some circumstances he must take, what is offered to him, but not unless it is offered or given willingly. Additionally, he must satisfy himself with the bare necessities and not use the kingship as an excuse for indulgence. Thus, he's given the bread, but not the goats and the wine. The third sphere is that of devotion and dedication to Hashem, to always remain a spiritually growing person. And the mention of the Plishti officers is a reminder that he will be responsible to eliminate the enemies of Hashem. Shmuel concludes his words with a direct instruction. V'yaradata pasuk chet, verse 8, V'yaradata lifanai ha-gilgal, V'hinei anochi yored elecha la'alot olot lizboach zivchei shlamim, Shivat yamim tochel ad bo'i elecha, V'hodati lecha et asher ta'aseh. Go down before me to the Gilgal. I will come down to you to bring the sacrifices. Wait for me for 7 days until I arrive, and then I will tell you what to do. Pasuk Tet, verse 9, V'aya kehafnoto shichmo lalechat me'im Shmuel, V'yaafoch lo Elokim lev acher, V'yavohu kol ha'otot ha'ile bayom ha'hu. As Shaul turned his shoulder to depart from Shmuel, Hashem transformed him with a new heart, and all of the signs came about on that day. Abarbanel notes that although Shmuel had foreseen that Shaul's transformation would evolve after his encounter with the band of Nevi'im, of prophets, Hashem brings about the metamorphosis even sooner, precipitating Shaul's transformation from a private to a public figure. While the Pasuk noted that all three signs were realized, special attention is given to the third sign, which drew public notice to Shaul for the first time. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, Vayhi kol yod'o me'atmol shilshom, Vayir'u v'hine im nevi'im niba, Vayomer ha'am ish el re'ehu, Ma'ze haya levin kish, Hagam Shaul Banvi'im. Everyone who knew Shaul previously and witnessed him prophesying among the prophets said to one another, "What has happened to the son of Kish? Is Shaul too among the prophets?" The people expressed surprise that Shaul, the son of Kish, who was a righteous person but not a prophet, had suddenly achieved prophecy without the usual prerequisite of seclusion and meditation. Then a man spoke up and said, "Who was the father of the other prophets?" Meaning, prophecy is not necessarily hereditary. It can be achieved by anyone who demonstrates his own worthiness. Therefore, it became an aphorism among the people. Hagam Shaul Banvi'im. What a surprising achievement that Shaul achieved prophecy in his own merit. Following that episode, Shaul ceased to prophesy and arrived at the Bama, the private altar. And Shaul's uncle asked him, "Where have you been?" He answered somewhat evasively, "We went to look for the donkeys, and when we couldn't find them, we went to Shmuel." And his uncle demanded, "Tell me what Shmuel said to you." Shaul answered, "He told us that the donkeys had been found." But regarding the kingship of which Shmuel had spoken, he did not tell him. The Gemara in Megillah 13b praises Shaul for keeping silent and attributes his silence to his modesty, his tzniut, which is a quality he had inherited from his ancestress Rachel Imenu, our foremother, Rachel, and subsequently bequeathed to his descendant, Queen Esther. Meanwhile, Shmuel sent out a call to the nation to gather at Mitzpah, and when they assembled, Shmuel delivered an oration, reminding the people of their miraculous exodus from Egypt, followed by a series of episodes in which Hashem continued to miraculously save them from their enemies. He adopts Hashem's language to him when he was upset by the request for a king. Va'atem hayom me'astem et Elokechem. In Pasuk Yotet, verse 19, "You today have rejected your God, who has repeatedly saved you from all of your troubles and difficulties, and you responded by requesting an earthly king. Now stand before Hashem according to your tribes." Shmuel performed a lottery in which the tribe of Binyamin was singled out, and among the families of Binyamin, the family of Matri was singled out, and then finally Shaul, son of Kish. But he was nowhere to be found. They asked Hashem further, "Has the man not arrived yet?" Pasuk Chav Bet, "Vayishalu od b'Hashem, hava od halom ish, vayomer Hashem, hinehu nechba el hakelim." And Hashem replied, "Here he is, hidden among the baggage." And they ran and took him from there, and he stood up among the people, and he was head and shoulders taller than the rest. And Shmuel said to the people, "Have you seen whom Hashem has chosen? For there is none like him among the people." And the people cheered and shouted, "Yechi HaMelech! Long live the king!" According to the Midrash, Shaul hid out of modesty. He insisted that the Urim V'Tumim be consulted again as to his worthiness, and meanwhile hid out of humility. However, once his selection was confirmed, Vayityatsev, he stood firmly, accepting the mantle of leadership, yet remaining b'toch ha'am, among the nation. Shmuel then reiterated to the people the mishpat ha'melucha, the protocols of the kingship, which he then wrote in a book and placed before Hashem, and then sent the people each to his home. Shaul, too, went home to his house in Giv'ah, and many whose hearts were inspired by Hashem accompanied him. However, Pasuk Chav Zayin, verse 27, Uvnei v'li'al amru, "Ma yoshienu ze, vayivzuhu, v'lo heviu lo mincha, vayhi kemacharish." There were men of evil intent who mocked Shaul and said, "How can this one save us?" They ridiculed him and refused to offer him any gifts. Shaul's response, "Vayhi kemacharish," he remained as if he were mute. This response is the subject of much discussion among the commentators. While his modesty before becoming king was praised by the Gemara, here the Gemara is critical of his behavior. In Yuma Daf Chafbet Amud Bet 22b, Chazal explain that Shaul would be punished for his excessive humility, for a king, as the representative of Hashem's authority on earth, may not forego his dignity and must respond to offenses against his honor. Rashi explains that by failing to respond to the insults of the Bnei Belial and to uphold the honor of his office, Shaul proved himself unworthy of the kingship. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in Sichot Musar explains that even a good midah, a positive character trait, if misapplied, can be bad. When Shaul could not overmaster his humility in order to defend the malchut, the kingship, he demonstrated a fundamental character flaw, an unwillingness to engage in confrontation, even for the sake of a primary value that would later be to his great detriment. Rav Ginsburg in Musar HaNevi'im defends Shaul, saying that it was appropriate for Shaul to maintain his silence so as not to mar the sanctity of the day, but that Shaul did fail by returning home as if nothing had happened, not taking the initiative to firmly establish his kingship even when clearly designated by Hashem. Thus we see that even in the first moments of his rule, and with all the divine assistance and reinforcement given to him by Shmuel and through his own spiritual transformation and elevation to prophecy, Shaul did not rise to the occasion and failed to set the standard for the honor due to a king of Israel. Thank you for learning together Le'ilui Nishmot Imotenu Hayikarot, Esther Oppenheimer Alea Shalom, and Sarah Schenker Alea Shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.